Hello and welcome to the QA Therapy podcast. Are you looking to improve your overall testing and quality practices? My name is Sergio Freire and I'm a solution architect and a testing advocate at X-Ray.
And my name is Cristiano Cunha and I'm also a solution architect and test advocate. And we'll be your hosts and QA therapists throughout this series. In this podcast, we're going to tackle some of the most common testing and quality challenges that we all face in our teams. So if this sounds good to you, keep on listening. Some of us may have heard the buzz around exploratory testing, while others may simply have missed it. In a world that has a legacy around scripted test cases, what does exploratory testing has to bring to the table? Can we use it to perform better testing somehow? To assist us on this topic, we have a special guest with us, Maharet Puyaharvi. Let's just go over what are the symptoms that are bringing you here. Actually, ask yourself, do you see your overall test suite as green, but you still have major bugs being reported by users? Do you see inconsistency in your product? Like one feature that should perhaps be tested more thoroughly and that can have some impacts on some other existing features? Or even, do you feel testing is only being done at the surface level? Or even, do you feel that your test cases are useless? Or are you in a company that the motto of the organization is automate all of the tests?
All these are symptoms that perhaps we are not performing the testing we should. Maybe we are adopting testing as a more bureaucratic kind of process. Maybe we don't understand what testing really means. And maybe we are just testing at the surface because it's more convenient and not because it brings more value. Maybe we haven't yet questioned our approach to testing. So let's step a bit into this topic. And once again, today we have here with us Maharet, our expert QA therapist, to assist on diagnosis and prescription on these symptoms related to exploratory testing. Maharet has several major awards in the testing space. She has delivered hundreds of talks, and she's also a frequent keynote speaker. She lives testing from the inside out. She has been improving the field for years and helping many of us along the way. Talking to Maharet is always a learning experience, and can talk it by myself. Welcome, Maharet. Are you comfortable in our QA therapy couch?
Definitely. And I think it's my first time being a therapist, so thanks for inviting me.
So to get the our show starting, so I have a very, very tough question. What is exploratory testing in your own words?
I think of it as the testing that provides the results. Like, if you forget everything else, but you expect that you need to know about the end quality, exploratory testing frames the work around getting to that, you know, resultful testing, good quality.
Yeah. And do you think we can frame testing without considering the exploratory nature of it? You think we can just, I don't know, consider that exploration is not part of a test case?
So it's a kind of a difficult one to explain. I joined this team that I'm in right now, and there were 5,000 written down test cases. You know, the traditional kind. The first thing that I calculated that if I wanted to read them 10 seconds per each test case, that would be 11 days of reading.
Yeah.
So can I have testing where I don't have to read all of those? Definitely I can. The old documentation, it might give me kind of like a platform to explore from. But what usually is the kind of the opposite of exploratory testing is that I would actually use those and try to stick to those that I can ever get through all of them. And I don't think you end up doing good testing when you try to stick to the plans that you made when you knew the least. And since you're learning every single day, you know the most today, not when you were creating the test case.
Yes, because the software changes and the world changes and the users change. All of the changes, right, Mehmet?
Yeah, and you change as well. Like, yeah. It's not like you are a static person either. Like, all of that, you know, all of the things in around you and yourself in that soup of the world around you, all of those change. And because there's so much change and there's so much learning, what kind of centers exploratory testing is this agency, this idea that you take the problem of having the information and you solve it with the best possible skills that you have on that level. So it's not an expert thing, it is a growth thing.
We've all seen you to refer to exploratory testing nowadays more as contemporary exploratory testing. Can you tell us a bit more about this way of framing it as contemporary?
Back in the days, somewhere in the 80s, Kem Kaner mentioned that there's these companies in Silicon Valley that do exploratory testing and describe that as kind of like this, you know, independent, results-oriented, kind of more professional way of doing testing. We didn't have test automation and the modern CI/CD pipelines and this level of unit testing or all of the tools that we have around software development these days. But what we did is the best thing that we could do back in the 80s. That was exploratory testing then. What I realized looking at testing today, I call it contemporary because I think it is exactly the same thing that Kem Kaner described in the 80s. But it is now taking whatever is new in the world, including unit testing in the toolbox, including microservices architectures in the toolbox, including whatever ways we can isolate features of quality, features of things that we need to know of in the system. And when we take that into account, it actually frames test automation and the so-called exploratory manual side of it as the same thing. So you have to actually put those two together, or you can't do the kind of professional work that you would expect exploratory testing to be the smart, intelligent testing that we do.
Yeah, and nowadays, you are mentioning that we also, besides we have all having this whole new tooling, we also have new sources of information that we didn't have like dozens of years ago, like the things that we get also from production. For example, we're seeing that with observability and monitoring, we didn't have that much back in the 80s or in the 70s. And now it's another source of information that can guide us, right?
Yeah. So again, like if I look at the team that I'm working with right now, I just calculated, because again, end of the year, you have to calculate things in the end of the year. I calculated that we have 1,250 test cases in the automation. That generally runs in pipelines about, you know, on average 20 up to 80 times a day. But on average, it's been running about 20 times a day. So that means we run 25,000 test cases every single day. And that is maybe 10% of the testing this one tiny team is doing. So it's reflecting the automation responsibility of a team. It's the output of exploratory testing. So everything we learn that we feel that is worthwhile keeping around, we add to that set of tests. But it's still a very small portion of all things testing that we do. It's been created out of exploratory testing, but it is also supporting the next rounds of exploring. If it fails, if it's ever red, it calls us to explore. Why? It calls us to explore, even if it doesn't fail and we notice that it's missing something, we're exploring why that's happening. And with the change going on in the world and in the product, we also will have to explore not just the old functionalities, but also new functionalities. And all of that is a great foundation for doing this, what I call contemporary exploratory testing.
Yeah, so you are actually putting together or answering the next question that for me was, why is it so important? Why exploratory testing is so important? And why should we adopt it? And you kind of start answering that, but do you want to add anything to it? Like bases of information. So it's where we learn things about our product and we feed that to automation. So that's a great motive to have. What else is important for us to have it?
So in a way, what we're talking about generally is developer intent and how well that we capture that in software in general. And how good is that intent? So it's kind of like stretching that intent that we had from whatever we ended up with to what we actually need in order to deliver well. That's what we basically are doing. So it is kind of important for us, not just the testers, but the entire team, to care for the quality and the results of that work that we're doing. So that's kind of how I frame it, that it's not the tester problem. It's not the testing alone problem. Mm-hmm. And it is quite fine that, you know, some of the developers like to call this as, you know, like just their basic skills and competencies. But if you look at kind of the gap between what's the output of a regular development team, even a good development team, and what's the output that we actually want to give to our customers, there's still a gap. There's this results gap. And that's what we're trying to get somehow addressed with exploratory testing.
So in your perspective, and I bet I know the answer, but I should ask anyway, when should we adopt exploratory testing?
I feel like you should say, like, when do you think we should be adopting it? Like, it's a continuous thing. Like, when do you start, you know, waking up in the morning and going to sleep in the night? Well, you know, people have a little different cycles, but when you start it, you kind of continue doing it ever since. So I don't think it ever stops or ever starts in that sense.
Yeah. So if teams are... I was just remember that sometimes teams are still in that kind of mindset that they, where they reserve some time for doing some sort of exploration. Well, sometimes they call it something else. Can we like give them tips to get out of that mindset?
So I've been recently working on this idea that there's kind of like three local cultures that I have lived in where, well, exploratory testing is different. Test automation, how we frame it and think about it, is different. Even the kind of like the team's ownership is different in some ways. The types of problems we think we are solving or are allowed to solve is different. And if we are kind of on the first stage where there's very kind of low level of trust in the team, exploratory testing is kind of like after you've done everything else, whatever you do and you schedule time for, you just call that exploratory testing. So you do everything and then you do some exploratory testing. Some teams do that. That's how they think about exploratory testing. But I'm not in one of those teams. But I recognize that those teams exist. Then there's the middle layer where there's a little bit more trust. It's kind of like the world where automation testing starts to emerge. So it's not manual only. But automation testing starts to emerge, but it starts to emerge kind of like to replace the manual testing. So kind of like we try to look for the things we tested now before and we try to automate those. So regression testing is kind of central to this middle type of thing. And their exploratory testing is typically, you know, it's feeding the automation, kind of like what are we missing? It is building on top of the automation, but it is still kind of like it's very much a manual activity. And then I'm in this third one. I call this world kind of like programmatic tests world. So it's not really automation. It's not I'm not replacing the testing that testers do with automation. I am replacing whole aspect of quality information that we need to repeat with automation. And it is very unit testing heavy, integration testing heavy. It is very testability interface heavy. So we do a lot of design decisions, test-driven, so that we can actually work in an efficient way. And their exploratory testing kind of frames everything. It's everywhere, it's all the time. So when I try to explain to people, when should you do this? You should first look at your organization. Where are you in this kind of growth cycle? And what I usually specialize personally in is going into teams that are on the first level, dragging them, usually kicking and screaming, to the middle level until they're comfortable and they think they're perfect and all is well. And then again, I drag them kicking and screaming to the third level. So it's kind of like a, you know, a longer term staged improvement. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. where you're trying to figure out how do you actually get from testers to testing, because that's what you want. You want to have testers in the teams, but the testing needs to be done by everyone, not just the specialists.
It's a really good way to frame it, yeah. And in this activity of everyone owns testing, what are the outputs? Do you have, well, bugs are one of those, but what else does this activity produces, in your opinion?
I generally think, well, bugs, not bug reports as such, but yeah. Some way of communicating about the bugs. So usually for me, for example, I try not to write a bug report. I mm-hmm. try to end up with a pairing session with a developer to fix it, or even fix it sometimes myself. So again, best bug is one that is reported with a fix that fixes it. And it is not possible for everyone and for every single bug, but you can do that in a pair and an ensemble format. So bugs, definitely. Then better testers. That's kind of like the essential part of what exploratory testing produces. Your skills, no matter what your role is, when you are exploring and exploratory testing, you will be growing in those skills. So you are a better tool, you're a better person the mm-hmm. next day. That's the core. And the third one that I think of is like different kinds of artifacts generally, like artifacts that we want to keep around. And I try to frame the artifacts around this idea that you want to produce artifacts not before you start testing. So test cases, if you want to write them, they are not an input to testing, they are an output of the testing. So mm-hmm. when you think you're done, take a moment to reflect all of the things you've learned and look at your artifacts, the test automation that you have, and make sure that it documents the best of you today for the future self that you're going to be serving with those things. So, yeah. So those are kind of the three main categories that I think, just skills, artifacts, and, well, of course, the information that we react to in the moment.
And all of that can be fit in into automation, like you said before, and readjusting and reframing it. Yeah, and always enhancing it.
Marit, and a bit at high level, since we are in a podcast, but it's hard to really sum this up. But how do you perform exploratory testing if we can think about of a process or... How do you do it in your day-to-day, for starters?
I think of a process kind of like, well, I think in terms of a developer-centric way of working in a lot of ways. So nothing changes in our end product unless we change something. So all of infrastructure, that's code for me. All of code, well, that's definitely code. All of our configurations, that's code. Like everything is something that we keep in version control, that none of it changes without us noticing. That's kind of the essential starting point of where I think of a process. Then the next step for me is kind of like you have smart people making those changes. And the smart people are not supposed to be left alone, because sometimes you have millions of customers who will suffer or enjoy of the changes those smart people are doing. So you don't want to leave anyone with the responsibility of millions might suffer, or, you know, you want to also share the joy of millions might enjoy. So you will bring together some kind of a team or at least a pair of people for anything that you change from the baseline that you had right now. So you look at whatever was changing. You usually see a pull request or a commit, or like, you know, a little bit differs in different teams, whether you will keep it in a queue or if you first allow it to be integrated and then you start exploring. Sometimes we actually, I've been in teams where we start exploratory testing after the developer kind of puts it already in production, the small change. So it might also be that, you know, we notice that it doesn't quite work from the monitoring and we quickly pull it out, like we have some of the automated things are kind of, you know, just protecting us from there. But the additional exploration that we're doing in that moment, it might be that we find yet more symptoms by either analyzing the analytics or spending ourselves time on an API, on a, you know, whatever we were creating. But like my process starts generally from we are about to make a change. Let's work together on that. Then on getting that change into some kind of a queue and making sure we still complete whatever work we feel like is necessary. That work kind of inspires. So again, for me, It's like I look at the software and it's my external imagination. I look at the changes and they are my external imagination. And those two together are how we drive the whole process of developing and exploratory testing.
Very good. So I want to share that I learned this word from you, serendipity. I always mess up saying this word, sorry. So what is it and what's its role in exploratory testing?
Serendipity is a lucky accident. So what we're usually doing with exploratory testing is that we're hoping that the things that used to work still work, and that the things that we thought we made work but have never checked will work when we look at them. And it's always a surprise that there is a problem. Sometimes the problems are kind of like pizza boxes in the middle of a living room floor that you can point out at them and say like, okay, these don't belong here, really easy ones. But a lot more often there's things where, you know, no human could really think of how to put these things together in this way to create this kind of a problem. So that's where serendipity hits us. So sometimes when you just, you know, you spend time kind of fast forwarding the use and the different kind of scenarios on the application, you run into a problem that you didn't think you would be running into. You can definitely, you know, add your odds by having the right kind of ways of focusing, but it's sort of a surprise. So I usually, I try to think of this as in like, I joined one new organization. And on my first day, I opened the web application that I was about to test. And I had to then go into this new person introduction. 2-3 hours later, I got back to my computer. And the only thing I had is the link that I had saved up in the morning. And I had the intention of kind of like, I'm going to be testing on my first new week and I'm going to be productive. That's how I went into that project. I clicked the link and I saw a big, you know, visible error screen. What happened? What just happened? I wasn't really trying to test. That's not how I use my skills of testing. Mm-hmm. I got lucky. This is serendipity. So I had managed to not only log into the system, I had also managed to click a few links more and choose the one thing in the entire system that had the technological choice of implementing it in different way than any of the other things inside the application. That when I then bookmarked it and when the login expired, it gave me immediately this big visible error. So kind of like sometimes this is, you know, it's like fool's luck in some way. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times it is that the luck comes to those who are actually giving the luck a chance. And that's kind of an essential part of exploring.
For sure. And in looking at risks and how can we deal with risks within exploratory testing? How can we make sure that we are covering, well, risks that we have in our product, in our organization, in our company?
I have to kind of like answer this with a question. How can we make sure of that with any test or anything ever?
Exactly.
So the better we learn to talk about risks in general, the better we are at managing them. And even if we don't know how to talk about risks, if we have kind of like a wide net of looking at things that are becoming a reality and allow that, you know, external imagination of seeing things live with the application, start those conversations, I think we're probably better off having those conversations actively whenever we see something worth a conversation, rather than trying to define that only these things are worthwhile a conversation. And then, of course, we need to track what conversations we've already had. So like if we accepted that, you know, these kind of things, we don't think they're risks. Unless something changes in the world, it's not worth our time to repeat those same things again and again and again. So we need to kind of like start looking at the change in the world and how that has an impact on our risk profile. So, you know, create a list of risks, test against each of those. You don't need a test case to decide that you're going to spend maybe, you know, 2 hours, 2 days, whatever amount of time you have around whatever first worst fear that you might have that could happen in the first days of production. And that's how we usually frame the risks, that they are something bad, something that we wouldn't want to happen, And if we're worried of those, we can always use time to address those.
Yeah.
You're taking me to another question related with exit criteria. When do we stop testing? Some people say, oh, it's a win, oh, we have all executed all the tests and with success. What is that? So whenever performing exploratory testing, what would be the exit criteria that that you say, okay, it's good enough to go, or even if this is really a good decision to make, to have something around the good enough? When can we stop testing at a given moment and say, and push things to ahead?
I kind of try to continuously address the coverage on various different levels. And coverage is, it's, well, it is of course code coverage. I know the code coverage of our test automation, of how well that covers the functionalities. I know, well, from unit tests, I know it by measuring it from the higher level tests that don't necessarily provide me that kind of a number. I have an idea of how they reflect to what I would call basically requirements coverage. So I do have kind of like, you know, listing of the code, listing of the things we think are worth claiming about the product. And I can look at those two things and make decisions based on those. But what I really care for is what I would call like a risk coverage, like, you know, finding all the relevant information. And there is absolutely no list ever that anyone can produce of all of the relevant information that testing should be producing out of the product that we have, because we can't create that list. It is, you know, that's what the end result is. It's kind of like a white paper with invisible ink, and the job of testing is turning that ink visible. We don't know what actually reads there. So sometimes when I teach this, I have that listing of things. And I think, you know, we are, you know, catch 22. I know 22 problems here. You're supposed to find them all. And then I learn that I missed 8 things that the group finds. That was the most recent experience with the application that I'm trying to kind of teach with people. So for me, I try to follow the code coverage and the claims coverage. I hate to call it requirements, because I think requirements are just a way for people to say that I want all of these things, and some of them might not be realistic and achievable, and they shouldn't be asking all of them in a one go, and there's a lot of kind of history in that. But kind of claims, the things we think are true today, if we can make an approximate list of those, it gives us an approximate list of thinking around when do we think we are, you know, done making sure that these claims at least are true. And I measure the amount of claims that I add. Like I usually track claims on a level of like an epic or like a user story. Like we have, you know, things that are related, the claims that are related to that particular thing. Usually from my best before we start implementing a new story where we have collected the claims and the examples, it's about 20% more that we have by the end of having implemented that thing. So kind of the open mind of saying that even though we did this before, we are not done. We are continuously learning and continuously improving. Our recent measurements seem to show that it's about 20% that gap still that we need to address. And the teams that don't pretend that they could answer the questions beforehand completely, they tend to be doing better in this space.
Marit, one question related more, let's say, with the test automation and exploratory testing, and what is the relation? Because sometimes I remember at the start when I was learning more about this topic, there were people thinking about frame exploratory testing as something that you do more manually, and test automation as something that you do aside. Nowadays, I know that that it's not really the best way to frame it, but in your experience, how do you connect exploratory testing and automation? Do you do exploratory testing while you perform test automation?
I can give you a couple of examples on how I frame it. I needed to be testing this new system, and there was a new report that it generates. It's supposedly it's for airports, and it generates that report once per hour. So to exploratory test that, what I needed to do is kind of like, you know, turn up the volume a bit. Once an hour is way too long for me to wait. So let's make it, you know, every 5 minutes. Every 5 minutes means that, you know, if I'm patient and I spend the whole day with looking at that, there's a high likelihood that I'm missing some of the things when it happens every 5 minutes. So I will definitely need automation to just, you know, keep track of what did it look like at the times when I care to look at it, even when I am not attending to the test in that moment. So typical way for me to test this feature was to kind of like, you know, create a piece of automation script that would look at it kind of like at 4 minutes, at 5 minutes, at 6 minutes, you know, usually, you know, certain seconds around that, and make sure that it was kind of reflecting the changes that I had also programmatically caused into the systems as patterns on how that report is supposed to be changing with the changes going on. And in the end of the day, I could spend an entire hour kind of like, you know, looking at the log that it created for me, especially for this exploratory testing purpose, and figure out that actually here, when you have this timing here with this kind of data combination, it's not working as we expected. And that's the essence of exploratory testing. I'm finding new information. So I had the unattended part of it with automation, and I had the attended part where I'm actually looking at the logs of the entire day, and it feeds into my next day of, I need more details of this. So I'm changing my automation script so that it, again, collects the right kind of exact information where I'm not quite certain, or adds to the patterns that I had in mind. So this is just one of those. Another one, which is very typical for me, is that the developers have created unit tests. And there's a pull request that they create. I take that pull request and those unit tests that they think they want to leave behind, and I parameterize them. Like, you know, oh, great, I have a test. It tests this thing this with this one example. What if I change all of the values? Like, what can I do? Like, do I now agree that leaving this value that you've chosen, do I agree that we should leave just this behind? Or do I think of these, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different combinations that I could do also on that same unit? So kind of like I get it for free, that starting point of small scale exploration, when I just vary the data or whatever goes into that unit test. Usually developers find the best example. It's kind of like, you know, what we do with equivalence classes and boundary value analysis. But what I basically say is then that, you know, maybe it wasn't yet good enough. Maybe we can do more, because there's some research suggesting that we could find up to 80% of our problems that customers are seeing in production on the unit testing level if we did something like this. So this is something that we do. We look at it and see if we want to leave something more behind. It's not that we need to. We can throw away all the experiments that we did on the data. But if we find something that is worthwhile keeping, then we grow the test suite. Otherwise, we throw it away. And the third example is I usually take complete newbies who have never done testing in professional way and are coming in to exploratory testing. And I start with them with what I call an automationist gambit, which means basically that I tell them that you have this constraint that you're supposed to write documentation, but the documentation is supposed to be executable. And this works really well, especially on simple web applications for teaching purposes. With automationist gambit, they actually find the majority of bugs with that test automation that they're creating. And it can be kept around for later in the CI pipelines, you know, doing the things that they did right from the beginning. So they learn how to test, how to be resultful, and how to document with automation all in one go.
It's a win-win situation. The person learns, and also the learning goes into the CI/CD. So time flies, and we really need to close our episode for today. So once again, thanks for being here with us, Marit, and helping us understand more about exploratory testing or contemporary exploratory testing and why it matters and why we should deeply embrace it to make better software and software that matters to and that is really useful for everyone and supports the team. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for being here. We learned a lot today.
Awesome.
Before ending our episode, it's time for some vitamins. We know that in general they are good for our health. In this case, we will be talking about vitamin X, where X stands for X-ray. Besides traditional manual and automated scripted test cases, X-ray also provides support for exploratory testing. With the desktop application X-ray Exploratory Hub, they can perform exploratory testing sessions, take notes, attach evidence, record videos or audio notes, easily report bugs, and in the end, upload the results to Jira and track the results and the impacts on the deliverables using X-ray. X-ray Exploratory Hub is a site companion that complements X-ray, allowing teams to cover user stories, epics, or requirements with exploratory tests. This way, teams will have full traceability between stories, tests, runs, and effects, no matter how testing was performed.
And we are reaching the end of this episode. And in this episode, we covered several topics related to exploratory testing and how important it is. If we haven't done so, we can now try this approach in our teams. For example, it's a great way to combine with test automation to cover the unexpected, the knowns, and the unknowns that we cannot code in advance, but we can expose through exploratory testing. See you on our next QA therapy session to share and learn together.
So see you in our next therapy session. Happy testing!
Happy testing!